WFSU FM now presents a delayed broadcast of the January 15th, 2013 to the Village Square Forum, recorded at St. John's Episcopal Church in downtown Tallahassee.
I'm Liz Joyner, Executive Director of the Village Square.
And I'm Bill Maddox, a member of the Board of Directors of the Village Square. We'd like to welcome you to You've Come a Long Way, Baby, The Politics of the Feminine. We're delighted to be partnering tonight with the Oasis Center for Women and Girls, which works to improve the lives of women and girls through celebration and support. They brought you copies of the executive summary of the Leon County Commission on the status of women and girls, and we'll share a word about that later this evening. There should be copies on all of your tables.
Tonight's program is made possible by the generous support of Zisfer Stansberry Advertising and Public Relations, which is supportive of nonprofits across the community, MedAffinity, a Tallahassee-based company providing electronic health record software for doctors. Neil Skeen with MedAffinity is here tonight. Neil, thank you. And Tallahassee Memorial Women's Pavilion. Warren Jones from Tallahassee Memorial is also here this evening somewhere. Thank you, Warren. Support from our sponsors makes it possible for us to keep our membership fee and dinner prices affordable while we bring you great programs. We are very grateful to them. And I'm going to hand it over to Bill.
All right. So the way our program tonight's going to work is similar to those of you who watch one of my favorite shows, Morning Joe, on MSNBC. We're going to do something similar to that tonight. Lecrae and I are going to first invite two of our panelists up, and then we will, over the course of the evening, add a couple of additional panelists, and I think you'll enjoy hearing from all of them. It's first my pleasure to welcome Stacy Fox. Stacy has been with Planned Parenthood over 15 years, currently serving as the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of North Florida. In February, Stacy will be stepping into the CEO role at Planned Parenthood of the Southeast, serving Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. Stacy is a strong advocate for social justice and has served as a volunteer and board member for local and national LGBT organizations. She has also participated at many levels of local politics. Please join me in welcoming Stacy Fox.
And it is now my pleasure to introduce to the stage Suzanne Vinker. Teacher turned author and social critic, Suzanne has written extensively about politics, parenting, and the influence of feminism on American society. Her writing has appeared in the New York Post, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Parents.com. Her books include the forthcoming How to Choose a Husband, The Seven Myths of Working Mothers, and The Flip Side of Feminism, co-authored with her aunt, Phyllis Schlafly. Suzanne has been on a wild ride the past month after writing an article for Fox News titled The War on Men. Please help me introduce and welcome Ms. Suzanne Vinker.
All right, so the way this is going to work tonight is we've got a couple of scripted questions, but what we really want is not for this to look in any way like your typical debate. In fact, one of the reasons why I was so slow to agree to do this is because I told Liz, I said, I don't want to be a part of the same old conversation or debate. So we've got some questions that we want to bring to the table to get the conversation going, but what we hope will happen now is just a dialogue. Among women who might be in a living room. In fact, Suzanne, move over here closer if you
okay.
would, just so that we can
I bring my water?
The conversation. Yeah.
Watch out for your feet.
And what we want is for you, as you're listening, to be thinking of questions that you might like to ask, because we'll want you to take part in the discussion as we go along. But Lecrae's going to get us started with the first question.
I'm shorter and smaller over on this chair.
The title of tonight's program presupposes that women are on a path to some destination. What is that destination? What do you personally see and want women to reach? And how would you define equality with men? Is it reaching a point where men and women are virtually interchangeable? Or is it reaching a point where men and women are seen as equals, even though they are seen as quite different as well? who wants to start this thing off for us.
Is that for me? So I have what might be an interesting or unusual perspective on the issue of gender equality and the just general male-female relations. I think men and women are equal, and that they have been equal for a very long time. I think that they are very different. They start in the womb that way, and we have gotten away from understanding the fundamental differences between women and men by focusing so much on this notion of equality. So one of the things that I do in my work and with my writing, and I have several things coming out imminently, in the next couple weeks actually, on this issue, is try to get people to think very differently from the way the culture has taught them to think about this issue. Is that an okay start?
That's good.
Now, do you
want...
Yeah. I can expound, but I don't want to...
We got all night.
Okay. Yeah.
Stacy.
Okay, I think that's a great question. One of the first things that came to mind for me is one of the things that comes out of my mouth really often is providing an equal seat at life's table. To me, it's really about equal opportunity for women and men. And I would, you know, disagree with Suzanne that, you know, men and women have equal opportunity and that we are really equal. But I do think that we have to nurture the differences and understand the differences between men and women. And I think, you know, in the early ages of feminism, women were working towards fitting into a man's world. Well, that's not always necessarily the case anymore. And so I think some men could certainly benefit from the things that women bring to the workplace and to politics, you know, leaning more towards the feminine side as, you know, women learn from, you know, what men bring to the table as well. So I think it's a blend of what you were asking of celebrating the differences and allowing those differences at the table, but making sure that women and men have equal opportunities to get to the table.
So what would be an example of your feelings that they do not have equal opportunity to get to the table?
Well, I think that's a good question, Suzanne. It sort of leads into the point, I think, where we differ about women and parenting. And I think that we don't offer women an equal opportunity to get back into the workplace. There isn't a place held for women, I don't think, for women to get back into the workplace where they left, to pick up where they left off, really, and move forward. We have a culture that sort of penalizes women for making a choice to stay home and parent. And so if women want to be in the workplace, we don't provide them an equal opportunity in that way.
So your argument is that equal opportunity means that if you step out, let's say at 35, from your job to raise children for, let's say, 10 years, that at 45... you sort of have the right, if you will, to step back in where you were at 35.
Well, when you're looking at someone's resume, if someone's taken off 10 years to go parent, that's not a ding on them, that's seen as a, you know, something very valuable and contributory, just in a different way. I've looked at resumes for years, and I think when people look at resumes and they're looking at when people jump jobs or take time off from jobs, that's not taken very kindly.
So what happens when they're up against the person who is still there from 35 to 45 going farther than she...
I'm not talking about qualification. I mean, obviously somebody who's been in the job 10 years longer is going to be differently qualified. But I think when we penalize women to take time off away from the workplace, and we don't give them the credibility that they deserve to come back in.
Let me ask you on this question. I hadn't anticipated we'd get to this quite so soon. That's fine. I had a fascinating conversation with my 20-something-year-old daughter, and she was relaying to me a conversation that she had with one of her male friends, guy that lives in her apartment complex. And he had recently graduated from college, is now working as a preschool teacher, which is what he had been trained to do. And he said this to her. He said, "Someday I'd really like to be a stay-at-home dad. That would be cool. But I guess it kind of sucks that stay-at-home motherhood probably wouldn't be an option for you someday, since there's a stigma now attached with it. So my question is, as we're considering progress, or kind of where we are, notice that, of course, that the title of our discussion tonight is "You've Come a Long Way, Baby?" Question mark. Are the kinds of attitudes that this young man is articulating, are they a sign in your mind of progress or a sign of regress?
Regress.
I would disagree. I think it's a sign of progress.
Let's let Stacey, and I want to hear from both of you.
I think that feminism as it was originally designed has to change. I think of this just in the work that I do around using the terminology pro-choice. That does not resonate with the next generation of women. And what our first wave of champion feminists did for women, and the messages and language and progress that they made doesn't resonate with our third and fourth wave feminists. They have to redefine it for themselves. I was just going back and looking at Anne-Marie Slaughter's article that she wrote about, you know, stepping away from her job and you know, that women still can't have it all. If you haven't read it, I think it's a good piece to be thinking about. You know, it certainly came to mind when you mentioned this. And, you know, whether women can have families and work, but I think more of it is not blaming feminism for this, but understanding how our work lives are set up so that it doesn't really support either men or women staying home with their children. So I really think it's progress. The movement has to change. The guardrails aren't the same as feminism has moved through the ages. And I look out and see some really, you know, young faces in the room. And for those women who identify as feminists, as young feminists, they're going to define what feminism is today. It's not the same feminism. So I think when some of the old guard, if you will, is saying, well, it's not, you know, we still can't have it all because that's what we were fighting for, that's not bad, and that's not regression.
Okay. Jump in, Suzanne.
So the reason why that conflict exists and will always exist and always has existed is because there is a natural, inherent conflict between raising children and pursuing demanding careers. Those two things are incompatible because children need a parent's attention most of their waking hours. If you are engaged elsewhere, emotionally and physically, you're not going to be able to tend to that task the way you want to, and vice versa. You're not going to be able to tend to your work the way you want to. If you read any of the literature, women's literature, or women's magazines about this issue, including the Anne-Marie Slaughter article, it's the same sort of realization or theme, if you will, in all of the articles, which is that this isn't working. And Anne-Marie Slaughter's was one of them. She thought she could literally live in another state from her teenage boys and there wouldn't be any fallout. So she realizes finally, late in the game, that, wow, her sons or children really do need a mom there, like in the state, in the house. And so she realizes it and comes home to address it and takes a different job locally and more part-time, if you will, so she can address that part of her life. And yet the solution in her article was still government-based. In other words, here's what government needs to do, here's how society needs to change, rather than just recognizing the theme of basically my work, which is that these two things are inherently incompatible. And we need to address that, accept it, and not scream and shout that the world's against you or that the government's against you.
All right, I wouldn't disagree with that. I just want to say, reading the end of Anne-Marie Slaughter's article, I think is really poignant because she speaks and she writes and says, I'm speaking from a place of privilege. You know, she had the privilege to go work for the government and leave Princeton for 2 years. But most women who are struggling to balance work and family lives don't have that privilege. And the idea of feminism is not even relevant to them and equality. So I think this That's another piece to the puzzle, is understanding the lens at which we're looking at this. Is that, you know, for those of us who have the ability to think about a demanding career and a family, because we have some leeway with that, there are thousands and millions of families and women who don't. So I think that's important to keep that.
Okay, so let me just go back here, because I want to tease out your response. You're saying that there's an incompatibility between work and family, especially when children are young. And yet the young man that my daughter was talking to was acknowledging that and was simply saying that he would like to be the one that would fulfill that role of being the primary caretaker rather than his wife. So the question on that point is, does that make any difference?
To a man or a woman, is that what you're asking? In general?
Does it make any difference?
Yeah. Should we welcome that just as much as we would a stay-at-home mother?
Yes,
absolutely. I mean, and I think...
All right, so wait a minute. Help me here. You guys began the conversation. And remember, I am but a man.
You aren't but a man. You are a man. Be proud.
On all questions that we are dealing with tonight, I am clueless.
No, you're not.
And I live, as all men do, in utter a continual state of confusion about what women want. So here's...
Says so women, sometimes. We're confused, too, sometimes. It's okay.
So here's my question. You guys began the evening both articulating the idea that you believed in equality, but that you felt like there were important differences between men and women. And yet on the very first question of the night about work and family, you're arguing both, it seems to me, that really men and women are interchangeable. Whether it's mom or dad makes no difference.
No. Well, that's why I asked you, to whom does it matter? That's why I asked. Do you mean, like, morally speaking, does it matter whether the father or the mother stays home? Or do you mean, is there any difference in the lives of the children? Are they interchangeable? In which case, I would say...
Any of the above.
So, do I have any opinion or cast any judgment on whether or not fathers versus mothers stay home? No. Do I think there's a different experience from the child's perspective as to whether or not they're raised by a male or a female, a father or a mother? Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think women and men are interchangeable at all. And I would agree with Suzanne. I mean, they both bring unique skill sets and, you know, brain power to the experience. To Lecrae's original question, I don't think we should be shooting for a society where men and women are interchangeable. That's not what I think equality about. What equality about is what I said is, let's get everybody to the same, give the opportunity to get to the same place, and then people make their own choices. They stay at home, they work, the dad stays at home, or the kid's parented by, you know, other...
But so overwhelmingly, women are the ones who do choose to stay home overwhelmingly.
Okay, hold that thought, because we'll come back to it, because we've got a lot to discover yet this evening. But I want to pick up on this comment. Accepting that we aren't going to all agree or that men and women should be interchangeable or not or whatnot, put yourself in this room 50 years from now, where there's a conversation taking place much like tonight. And the question is, have we made progress in the roles and relationships of men and women since 2013? And the question that I want you guys to hear from you is, will the state of play 50 years from now, ideally, be one in which the men and women, their identities are becoming more and more like each other, not interchangeable, but like each other? Or will they be more and more different, though equal? Because I think we all agree that equality is... I mean, do either of you...
And I'd like to add to that question, is one path better than another? When you answer that, you know, is one more ideally what we're going towards? You know, my original question was, is there a destination? That destination, is one better than the other on those two?
Well, I think, like I was saying, in early feminism, right, women were trying to find an equal footing. And when we're talking about business and, you know, corporate America and places where women were working to insert themselves, they had to look more like men in order to fit in, because there weren't very many female faces. But that's changed. And so I think that the 50 years from now, if we can embrace the differences of men and women, allow space for men and women to exist equally, then that would be my goal. You know, I mean, I hate to throw this out there, but I'm going to, because it keeps coming up over and over, that we still live in a rape culture. You know, I mean, we live in a place where men exert their power over women. And I think, the Women and Girls Report that just came out about Leon County, a third of women who were beaten or died in Leon County were related to domestic violence situations. I mean, that is not equality. So to me, 50 years from now, that's what goes away. That's the piece of equality that needs to change.
What was the question?
future.
Yeah. So I would like to see less focus on this idea of... See, I think progress in a culture can coexist with tradition. And I think that's where the whole cultural dialogue gets lost, is you have this huge divide between progressives and traditionalists. And I think most of us fall somewhere in the middle. I don't know about you guys, but I happen to think that there are some things that are traditional or classic, if you will, that never go out of style and don't need progress. Take the little black dress, right? Women need a little black cocktail dress in their closet. No matter what year it is, it's always going to work. There are some things that just don't change, and human nature is one of them. So the fact that men have certain traits that they bring to the table and women do doesn't need to change just because we progress as a culture. So I think the focus on progress is, when it comes to this topic anyway, men and male-female relations, isn't the right one.
All right, I want to pull Lecrae in, not as a moderator, but I want you to take your moderator hat off and just tell me, a lot of young women your age in college, I know, are wrestling with these sorts of questions as they think ahead in terms of their future careers and family lives and whatnot. What do you see and observe on your campus and among the people of your generation on some of these questions that we've been wrestling with?
Right, and I'm glad you asked that. I actually want to backtrack a little bit, if we can, to the comment that was made by your daughter's friend about her not being... If you would you repeat that really quick?
Yeah, well, he says, I'd like to do it, but then he says, it kind of sucks that stay-at-home motherhood probably wouldn't be an option for you someday since there's a stigma associated with it. So he perceived there was no stigma associated with a guy staying home, but there would be one with a woman. Now, keep in mind, my daughter's in Hollywood, and so you get...
Oh, yeah, that's a mess. That's a real mess.
That's real life.
You get the
skewed version
of California. But at any rate, that was his perception, so go.
Right. No, and I think that's that goes hand-in-hand with the question about what do I see on campus for myself and what pattern I see with young women my age. My friends and I have conversations over... the stay-at-home mom and the idea of what we want for our careers all the time. And I would go as far to say that it really just depends on the individual, you know? And that's what I was, you know, I was going to plug in a little bit earlier, too. I think that whether to label that as progress or regression, it depends on the individual. I know a lot of the young ladies at my university, I attend Florida A&M University, are like me. We're... you know, striving to obtain a degree, and we want to one day pursue careers in that degree. And maybe we don't want to take the time out to per se serve as a stay-at-home mom, but we don't look down on that. I don't think we see that as negative at all. One of my best guy friends, his mom is a stay-at-home mom, was a stay-at-home mom, and he's a great guy. We've seen, you know, in our culture and we've seen in our age where being a stay-at-home mom or being a working mom can play out in different roles. In some situations, one pathway is more feasible than it would be. You know, a lot of different variables go into that. So to answer, not to veer too far off, to bring it back in, you know, for my age, I do think it depends on the individual, whether or not, you know, the idea of a woman's role being, I don't even like to term it like that. You know, it depends on the woman, whether or not she wants to pursue a career or to serve as a stay-at-home mom. And I don't think one is better or worse than the other.
Look, there needs to be room for both, right? I mean, I think, what if we took women out of politics completely, we took women out of the workforce completely, we'd be missing a huge richness of the population, right? So we have to make room for both. We've got to make room for women, you know, who choose that path, men who choose that path, and those who choose to go into the workforce.
Right now, I need to make room for a woman in the back of the room who is waving and telling me that we need to throw open for any questions that you guys may have. And while you're identifying your interest in asking a question, I want to invite up another guest who I think you guys are going to really enjoy and who has an awful lot to add to our conversation. And that is Rosalind Fuse-Hall is the executive director of Title III programs at Florida A&M University. Roz is a graduate of the Rutgers School of Law and an Eisenhower Fellow. She's been a leader in higher education for decades at UNC, NCCU, and FAMU. She's worked as the chief of staff in the office of the president at FAMU, as executive assistant to the chancellor and acting vice chancellor at North Carolina Central University, and as secretary of the university and associate dean at UNC Chapel Hill. Roz has taken a special interest over the years in women's issues, is obviously a very accomplished professional woman, and also mother of a soon-to-be graduate of the University of North Carolina also.
Go Tar Heels.
Yeah. Welcome, Roz. Thank you. Yes. Okay, do we have any questions from the audience at this time? There is one in the back, and then we're going to pull from Roz.
Okay, I have two questions, and you can just pick one. What opportunities do women living in poverty have to choose the option of staying at home to care for their children? And aren't we really talking about rigidly defined gender roles as opposed to loosely defined gender roles rather than just what women and men are equal at?
Good. I like the second question. Somebody want to jump on that? Are we looking for rigidly defined gender roles or loosely defined gender roles or any gender roles at all?
I think that's really a great question, and my work speaks to that directly. A lot of times you have this divide between the right or the left, or the traditionalists versus the progressives. And the thinking is that, you know, traditionalists are locked in this place of rigidity. Now, maybe some are. I am not one of them. And I don't think that the rigid traditionalist is the norm. I think there is a place for common sense, reasonable recognition of natural gender roles and the things, again, that men and women bring to the table that's unique while still being flexible. So, for example, let's take the issue that I talk about in my writing as far as men wanting to be providers and protectors. I think that is a natural, inherent desire of most men, not all men, but most men. And that just because I encourage women to let men take on that role because it is part of their DNA, if you will, doesn't mean they don't ever change diapers, and doesn't ever mean you won't have a job. It just means that you recognize that that's their core center. Just like nurturing is a female or average woman's core center. So to me, recognizing that doesn't mean no man does the dishes and no woman holds a job.
Well, and I think it also, you know, we have to look at the evolution of the study of gender, right? I mean, back in the day, we were studying the socialization of gender, right? And then that's what defined gender. But then we kind of start to begin to understand the biology of gender, right? And there is some physiological markers to our gender roles, and you can't ignore those, right? I mean, the corpus callosum of a female's brain is thinner than a male's brain, and so it speaks to how their brain functions. So you can go home and tell your partner that, whichever works for you. But you can't ignore that biology. You know, I think that's what you were saying, Suzanne, right? That's the innate part, and we've got to incorporate that. But I think as we've learned in society, that labels just aren't really working for us. And so I think my answer to your question about gender roles would be, if we could just get rid of gender roles as we've defined them, would be great. because they just don't work anymore. But I think we also can't ignore the biology of gender, and some of those things are
innate. How do you not ignore the biology, but then get rid of traditional gender roles altogether? I don't understand that connection.
Hold that thought. I want to pull Roz in. Roz, tell us where we're going wrong. Set us straight.
Well,
help us out.
One thing I'd like to offer as a difference is that 50 years from now, our children, based on my interaction with my children, my godchildren, the wonderful students I have the opportunity to work with, just see the difference. Because there is evolution in what they've grown up with, what they've learned, what they've been exposed to. There is an evolution. And so, in my mind, those gender labels will be very different 50 years from now than they are currently right now. And what they define as their traditions may be a little different than what we grew up with as traditions. And if we look back in history, we will know that traditions have changed over time. So evolution, I think, is the role and where we need to go with this. And we will stop talking about mommies and daddies, and we'll talk about parents. And maybe there'll be two parents in the home, or three, or four. I come out of a tradition where the extended family is very much a part of that nurturing parenting program for children to become wonderful adults who have the eagerness, the creativity, the intelligence, the socialization, to be good people. And if I could define progress, that's what I would be trying to define progress as a place, we get to a place where we can applaud change and evolution.
Okay, so let me make sure I hear you correctly, Roz. Really provocative. What I think I hear you saying is that you would be more on of the opinion that we ought to strive for interchangeability, or at least an emphasis on commonalities rather than between men and women, rather than an emphasis on differences. Is that fair?
And a commonality on what it is we're striving to achieve down the road. If my objective as a parent and as a commuter parent, as a mother who did it all, as a Southern parent, my objective was to make sure that my child, who happened to be a female, grew up with a great self-esteem and a sense of empowerment and finding her own voice. That would be my... I also have godsons, and that's my same objective for them. And I have students, and that's my same objective for them. So what I'm saying is, when people would say to me, well, you're on the road doing a lecture, who's staying at home with your daughter?
She's 22.
A serious question? No, when she was four and I was traveling. I mean, a parent. Because if you say a parent is at home with a child, no one seems to be bothered by that. If you say, well, the father is at home with the child, then we get into these, oh, well, shouldn't the mother be there? I don't know. He knows her routine. He knows how to dress her. He knows how to feed her or make sure she gets fed. So once again, my thought is that 50 years from now, because our children are very different than us, thank God. I'm very different from my mom, thank God. But I think that evolution, and that means change, and the changing roles and attitudes that we have is what should define progress. That's my thought.
Okay, so help me, all of you, wrestle with a problem that my daughter laid in my lap recently in talking about her best friend from college. She's a very high-powered, early career executive who has a longtime boyfriend that desperately wants to marry her but does not have the same earning power that she does. And the question that she's wrestling with is, should I marry him and, in effect, marry down? Which is something that in her way of thinking was not what she was anticipating or expecting. Should I step back in my career and possibly take a less demanding, less paying job so that I don't somehow jeopardize his sense of manhood or whatnot? You had raised earlier, Suzanne, the question of men wanting provider, protector type roles. What advice would you give to a young woman today who's wrestling with the question of, is it okay or should we aspire to marrying up, marrying down, or marrying across? Does it make a difference?
I think it does make a difference. And I think if you look at the trends that's happening in our society and a lot of other cultures, is that this idea of marrying up and marrying down isn't happening as much. That people, doctors aren't marrying secretaries, and either gender, doctors are marrying doctors. You know, academics are marrying academics. So that it's not about gender and equality issues. It's about differences in families now. So there's a wider gap among the families. I think it's hard to give advice to a young woman in this situation, because I think, Lecrae, you mentioned, it's very individual. You know, we can't put our values on someone else. We have to help her discern her own values and what's important to her to help guide her. And I think that's what you were saying, Roz, right, is it's about the self-esteem, and help get that out of her, not put it on her, mm-hmm. which I think is part of the issue. Part of the issue I have is sort of that we're placing on the next generation, like I said earlier, the idea of what feminism is. It's not the same. It's got to change. So
one of the things that's happened over the last 30 years with feminism's drumbeat of telling women, the earlier generation telling the modern generation, the current generation, to never depend on a man, which was a very common theme in modern households. And keep in mind, this is the same group who are essentially the products of the divorce generation. So they don't have any good role models for marriage. On top of that, they were told to never depend on a man and to make their own way and to compete with men and to go out there and have equality. And that changed everything. And one of the things that it did was men heard that message. They heard women say, essentially, you know what? We don't need you. We can make our own way. We can pay our own mortgage. We can have our own babies. Well, not exactly, but we can raise children on our own. Let's put it that way. Basically, there isn't just much we need you for. And they heard that. So they're not striving as much. They're not working to be the provider and the protector because they've been told in no uncertain terms that that's not the way it works anymore. And so what happens is they've lowered their aspirations. And they're not striving for the same thing that their fathers were. And now that they're not, women are saying, now I'm getting to be 25, 30, 35, I'm looking to get married, and there's no good men left anymore. And by good, they mean, guys who can hold a job. You don't necessarily have to be rich, but just hold a job. Rich is good, sure, but hold a job would be great so that I have options in my life. Maybe if I have a baby, I want to stay home with him or her. But I can't do that because the guy can't bring home a paycheck. That's where my work comes in. I'm trying to say, look, we've done something here. We've got to address it.
I don't think during my generation women were aspiring never to be able to depend on a man. I don't remember those conversations. And I asked my daughter this question with her, she's 22, and with her friends and what she thought they were saying. And one of the things she said to me, she doesn't understand this concept of marrying up or marrying down. She thought it was about age. And that's because in their worlds right now, they don't see that economic or the status quo as much as probably they did during my generation. So she said, Mom, the key thing for us is maturity, that we would probably delay having children or getting married until we felt we were more mature. And I said, mature as a woman or mature as a man or both? And she said, basically both. We would like to be secure. We would like to make sure that we've stabilized our situations. And so their decisions are based on a little different conversation. I think during my generation, that conversation was based on the clock, the biological clock. They're in her generation, it's based on a conversation of how can we create a stable home if we're going to introduce children or other people into our lives at that time.
Because we know the clock runs longer now.
And that same group is going to run into that same biological clock. Isn't that interesting?
The
so their focus has changed, but they're still going to run into the same biological clock problem.
But the clock is different because the clock before was you've got to have a child by 25. I don't think anyone
we know so
now,
much more about it.
We're talking about biological more. Clock in terms of not social expectations of when you have children, but when your body wants to have children and when it stops having them.
But that's also extended.
That's not
and
sociological.
Changed.
That's biology.
But that's changed because of technology and medicine. And the expansion of medicine.
Yeah, I'd really like to ask a question that I can't, which is, do you think men in their early 20s today are as mature as they were of a another generation? But we're here to talk about women, so we'll save that one for another time, and we'll instead turn to this question. From the audience, this is a really good question. What is the most destructive message that the media is teaching our children about women, and what can we do about that?
That is a great question. I'll start. Yeah. The thing I think media is teaching young women about being a woman in today is that you have to be a gold digger, you have to have long, swinging, flowing hair, you've got to be pencil thin. You've got to just want to shop in 7-inch heels and get a reality show. And
time out right there. How different is that from 50 years ago? And
I think it's not, as you know,
50 years ago was the year that Betty Friedan wrote her famous book. It was the year the pill was introduced. We've seen a lot
years.
Of there are a lot of things, but. Go back 50, well, go back 30, go back 10
for
years.
For me, 50 years ago.
Have you
ago,
seen Audrey Hepburn's waist?
For me, 50 years ago, most of those women were white with blue eyes and porcelain
Thank
skin.
So we've
today,
made,
at least, they are people of color. The richness is from Beyonce to Oprah Winfrey. So they're all body sizes, body shapes, body styles, lifestyles. They're southern, they're northern, they're eastern. They're a combination. Some may have Puerto Rican fathers and Jewish mothers, or some may have African American female mothers and white Anglo-Saxon fathers. So it's a little different.
And it's more hypersexualized. I mean, I think, yes, we were selling sex 50 years ago, but the sex didn't look anything near like what it looks like today. Let's be really honest about that. And the access to that type of information is so much more broad than it was. And I think
You're here arguing for that we've made regress, but not progress.
No. In the media?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the media makes... I'm not a big fan of the media. I don't own television and haven't for 4 years for that reason. I do not support mainstream media and their objectification of women or men. And I think we make a big mistake by not teaching kids about media literacy and how to dissect the images that they're seeing. To what you're saying, Roz, they're getting inundated with this through games and music and TV, but they don't know how to digest it and what's real and what's not real. We're not teaching them media literacy. And I think that's doing a lot of harm to our culture.
The biggest media difference today from 30 years ago is selling the notion of the hookup culture, which is casual sex, and singlehood and work for women. That those three things are the be-all, end-all, and that they are going to make you, quote-unquote, empowered. When the vast majority of women, by the time they hit a certain age, those things aren't going to matter to them nearly as much as getting married and having babies. And when they have those babies, they want to take care of them. That is a reality that happens to most women by a certain age. So that all the messages that they're getting from the culture up until the time when they're 30 and decide to settle down or whatever the age is, have been completely counterproductive to what they ultimately want.
But Bill, here's the difference that my group of friends and I have taken with this same subject. We do own television. We watch it. But we always take that as a learning lesson. Mm-hmm. If there is a video, and I remember this with my children, and I keep saying my godchildren because there are 8 of those young people that are in my lives that are like my children. Whenever we saw that, we would take that as a moment to say, ask them questions. Start teaching them how to critically analyze and look at those messages, not just say to them, oh, that's bad, it shouldn't be on television, but say to them, wonder why do you all like that? What's important about that? And listen to them and help them understand what that says and how you can acculturate that into your thinking if you don't pay attention and analyze it and do something about it. And then teaching them also the power that they have as consumers, that if they don't like it, they can write a letter or send an email, and encouraging them to do that. I mean, I think those are teaching, but I come from a teaching culture, so we have a tendency to do that.
A lot of the confusion that I suspect most men, certainly this man, often experiences in trying to figure out women is knowing which categories are categories about which one should have choice and which categories are categories where there's a right way and a wrong way. And what I hear you guys, I think, all saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's a right way to present women in media and a wrong way, that the sexual exploitation that you're describing that is so rampant today, that was far less common a generation ago, but still existed, certainly, is wrong. And yet you will hear in many locker rooms, male discussion, well, this is just a matter of choice. And women who wish to go on MTV or BET, either way, who wish to allow themselves to be used or to display themselves in this way are just exercising their freedom, their choice. And so the question is, I certainly am not here, believe me, to make a defense for that. Okay, I'm not defending the locker room here, but I do want to hear your, I guess, help me understand, what are the categories about which we should say that's just a matter of choice, and what are the categories where we would say there's really a right way and a wrong way?
Well, there's a way that's going to get you to what you ultimately want. So for women, is it really to have sex with 15 guys? Or is it to find one who's going to love you for the rest of your life? And I would say the same thing for men, ultimately. So if that's the goal that most of us share, then how is the casual sex culture or hookup culture the last 20 years in any way, shape, or form progress?
Once again, I think it's about evolution. It's about the ability for a woman to have the choice
to
make
to what?
That choice.
Choice to
choose to have a desire to want to get married and have a child, or decide to not want to do that and live a single life. There are lots of women who decide
that's different.
They want
that's
to live a single life, but it's choice. It's also trying to making sure that you teach women and give them opportunities that's not the only choice they're left with. Like the question that came, I think, from the audience is that if you're poor and you don't have a choice because of your life circumstances, then there are certain things that you have to do in order to make life work for you. And they may not be things that I like because those are not the things that I grew
up with. But how would that
with.
Apply to the
but they,
topic
but
of
they
sex?
But they still may be things that I have to do it because that's what will make me be able to put food on the table for my children or provide for myself.
But what's it have to do with sex?
Well,
it
I
has
think
a
what
lot
I,
to do with
I
sex.
Does ha- I think it has a lot
fails.
To do with sex.
Yeah.
And, I'll just jump in and say I think that I would even dial it back a little and talk about you know, when you mentioned the hookup culture, I think that's done a lot of harm as well, the promotion of that. I mean, I see that every day at work, you know, in the disease rates. I mean, I live in Jacksonville, Florida, which you might laugh, but is the chlamydia capital of Florida, and we have a part of Jacksonville that has more chlamydia cases reported than people because it is illegal in Florida to give a, you know, partner delivered therapy treatment, which is a totally different issue. But I think we've got to go back and talk about how we're talking to kids. I mean, this goes back to the media literacy and how we understand how their brains work to help them deal with these cultural experiences. I mean, the reality is that teens, frontal lobe of a teen's brain isn't fully developed until they're in their early 20s. They don't understand risk. And so by getting exposed to this hypersexualization culture, they don't see any problem with the risk of getting involved in that. It's like the, you know, I always liken it to the wrecked car during prom, you know, that they dumped on the front lawn. What a teen's brain says is, cool, wrecked car. You know, they don't comprehend that could happen to me if I drink and drive. That's why the Just Say No campaign failed. So we've got to go back and understand. It goes to me back to the self-esteem issue, Roz, is that, and we've got to hit this on all fronts. I mean, I think the media issue is big, but we have a responsibility to talk to kids and encourage them and grow their self-esteem so that they have other skills to be able to combat these issues around sexuality, you know, and I do believe in a freedom of choice, you know, and I don't have a problem with sex for sex if it's consensual between two adults. That might be a little progressive for some folks. And sex for love is good too. You know, I mean, I think that's about choice. When you ask what's okay for choice, for me, it's okay to make a choice if you're deciding to have sex for sex or sex for love, as long as you're able to make that choice. And I think the ability to make that choice could, you know, might be questionable with folks based on their own self-esteem. It may look like, you know, women who work at Hooters, you know, you may assume that all their self-esteem is high and that they're proud of their bodies, but maybe not. So I think that...
My question would be to that is, if... It's okay for women to make choices, for young women to have their own voice and make these choices. But if it leads to, you know, that means they have the choice of whether or not to sleep with complete strangers after partying with them in a club, that's not progress. And so, or I wouldn't deem that progress. I guess, what would you all deem that? I mean, yes, they have a choice, but... When we say it's okay for you to choose who you want to sleep with or how many people, that opens up a whole new can of worms. That goes back, that delves right back into, it rotates right back into self-esteem and, you know, issues like that.
That's so, why we need to be, that's why I think we need to be talking about self-esteem very early with boys and girls. When they get to that point in the club, they have a whole different skill set to be able to discern whether they really want to make that, you know, what choice they want to make.
So the discussion needs to be had before we get there.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. I really do believe there needs to be more education around self-esteem, pride, and the choices, the consequences, how you make the decision, how you make a decision, and how you get facts and you analyze it. I think we need to teach children and young people, teenagers, how to do that, because that gets to your point about making sure that then when they see drinking and losing control, however you do that with substance abuse or with drinking, can lead to some consequences that then I have to deal with. And understanding all of those, as opposed to, oh, sleeping with the quarterback on prom night might be a cool thing to do. That I think those are the kinds of steps that we have to do and think about, and that's what we get to when we talk about someone having the choice.
Yeah,
it's understanding what those choices mean and what they lead to.
Let's pick up on this question of choice, and especially as it relates to talking with young people and helping them understand what it means to be male or what it means to be female. And as I consider kind of the last 50 years or whatnot, it was common once for school kids on the playground to recite a little rhyme that went, or that ended, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes Susie with the baby carriage. There was a cultural script that every young person was handed. They might not like that script, but there was guidance being provided by adults for young people on kind of what adults viewed was the proper order of things, okay? My perception is that today we no longer have cultural scripts when it comes to sexuality. And the question would be, is that progress, or would there be utility in offering guidance to young women in particular as to how to get what you want? What paths lead to success and prosperity? I mean, we have these in the workplace. We say, you know, And with careers, we say, if you want someday to have a good career, then do well in school, go to a good college, study hard, do an internship, advance in your career. We don't really have a path, do we?
No, you don't have.
And is that a problem? Because on the one hand, we're talking a lot about how it's great that we have all these new choices and opportunities. On the other hand, I wonder, would young people rather have fewer choices and more guidance?
There is tremendous guidance for what to do in your quote-unquote independent life or your work life or your career or whatever, but there is virtually no guidance in terms of your personal life, and that's where I come in. That, as far as my work goes, I mean, that's what I write about. The choice to have casual sex or sleep around or whatever has always been there. It's always been there. 50 years ago, there were women, girls, who did that. They had a name, but that's not the point. The point is the choice was always there. The difference is that the cultural script has changed. As you pointed out, Bill, it used to be marriage and family. Today, it's not. It's sex, it's independence, and it's work. End of story. There is absolutely no script for your personal life. There's no space for marriage and motherhood when it comes to teaching young women about their futures.
Oh, is that bad, though?
Yeah, it's really bad, actually, since most women, that's not going to work for most women.
But if this were a conversation among men, and the question were emphasizing sex, work, and independence, I suspect most men would say, or at least many males would say, hey, yeah, bring it on.
So, and then that gets back to the difference between men and women, what I was talking about originally. I cannot tell you how many women I have heard from, and girls, who have thanked me profusely for the work that I do because there is no voice out there for them as to how they're going to, A, marry their desire for being a wife and mother with their desire for an independent life, number one. And number two, just wanting to be able to say, I want to get married and be a mom. Like it's embarrassing, like it's something that they have to hide. That is what has changed in this country, that the whole focus of relationships, of family, of nurturing has just disappeared, and the focus is on this marketplace or this outside fulfillment that we're going to get that can't possibly match what we can experience in our personal lives. Those two things are separate entities.
That will have to be the last word for the recorded portion of our program tonight. This was recorded live at St. John's Episcopal Church in downtown Tallahassee. The Village Square is committed to civil and constructive public dialogue on the issues that matter to our community, our state, and our nation. Find the remainder of tonight's conversation online at tothevillagesquare.org. Thank you for joining us, and good night.
Join us again next time for another visit to the Village Square on WFSU-FM.